The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Mess around and have a triple-double again and again and again. What's good, everybody? Welcome into First Take.
You realize Westbrook lives in Ice Cube's good day.
Right?
Ice Cube's best day. Westbrook lives there every night for 4 years.
No question. Super Bowl champ Chris Canty with us, and I'm liking the fit. Okay, I see you.
I appreciate that, Molly. You see I'm out here with the monochromatic look, all black.
I'm always into the monochromatic.
I feel like we need it all black today because listening to some of Max's take on the production meeting, I'm going to have to bury a few
of them.
I'm going to have to bury a few of those.
6'7", 320. You got to have someone making those. You're not buying all
custom. And I see the Tom Fords, too. I know what it is. All right, let's get it, guys. Things are getting right in the nation's capital. Russell Westbrook setting records on the nightly. His 182nd career triple-double surpassing the career mark set by Oscar Robertson in the 70s when he grabbed his 10th rebound against the Hawks in the fourth quarter. Westbrook finished 28 points, 13 rebounds, 21 assists in their loss. He adds the career triple-double record to all of his other triple-double records. He already held records for the most in a season. That was set in 2016, 2017, and the most consecutive. He also averaged a triple-double in four seasons. The only player to do that is Oscar Robertson, and he only did it once. It was all good just a week ago. Max, who said that? Let's flash back to Scott Brooks.
There might be some that probably can do certain things better, but there's nobody in the history of the game that can do what he does throughout the stat sheet. I used to always say he's going to probably go down as the third best point guard ever, but I think he's past one, and he's going to go down as probably the second best. And one is obviously Magic. What he does, there's no point guard has ever done it. Nobody. And for him to average four triple doubles in 5 years, what Oscar said about him was, to me, that was real. He's doing MVP type things every game.
Max, before the show, Kendrick Perkins. We need an NBA champion, another one for the conversation.
Oh, you want some more today? Back for more. Here we go.
What's up, Perk? Max, I want to start with you. I'm listening to Get Up. Jalen's on there, and he was saying, I never thought anyone in my lifetime would pass Oscar Robertson. So tell me this. Where does Russ rank amongst all-time point guards?
Well, he's not top three. That's ridiculous. He's not. Listen, is Russell Westbrook the third best point guard today? Because no one's going to take him before Steph or James Harden. And Westbrook's my favorite player, and I'm telling you that. I would pay to see Westbrook before anybody else. But no one's taken him before Steph and James Harden. It's not even really his fault. It's because he doesn't shoot it really well. And he does everything else really well. But in the modern game, you have to be able to shoot it. Look, when you hear Scott Brooks say it, you got to not just take it with a grain of salt. You need a whole salt shaker, right? He's his two-time coach. Of course he's going to up his dude. Of course he is. But is Russell Westbrook, look, the real answer to the greatest point guard of all time is LeBron James. Oh, he doesn't, he's a forward. Yeah, he runs your offense. He's your primary ball handler. He's your playmaker. By the way, he can guard the other team's point guard, even if it's Derrick Rose in his best season, right? That's the real answer. But if you want to take him and Doncic, all the kind of like point forwards out of it, they're still just even today, Steph and James Harden. Let alone all time, because every era has multiple dudes like that guy. You want a guy who won championships? Isaiah Thomas won championships. You want guys who put up crazy assists? This one put up crazy assists. That one put up those numbers. This one made deep playoff runs. I mean, to call Westbrook the third greatest or second greatest because he had a triple-double streak, you know what it reminds me of, guys? Pete Rose has the hit streak, and by the way, he should be in the Hall of Fame. And the hit streak means he was great, just like this triple-double streak means Westbrook is great. But it doesn't mean he's the greatest of all time or top three at his position. It just means he's a very great player who reached an amazing accomplishment, and we should applaud him without going into hyperbole talking about other than Magic. He's the greatest point guard of all time.
Yeah, Max, I'm with you 100% on that. And to comment on Scott Brooks' statement about him being the second greatest point guard of all time, if that's the truth, if that's a fact, then Scott Brooks, that's kind of an indictment on you as a head coach, because you had him and Kevin Durant for seven seasons out in OKC, and you weren't able to get out the West only but one time. And not to mention, you also had James Harden for three of those seasons. But that's an aside. When you look at the all-time greats at the point guard spot, I just can't put Russell Westbrook in the top two. I think there's a case to be made that he's probably outside of the top five. If you just look at the triple-doubles career list, the top five on that list, Oscar Robertson, Magic Johnson, Jason Kidd, LeBron James, you're not putting him over any of those guys. You're not taking him over any of those dudes. And then, Max, you mentioned it's Steph Curry and James Harden currently. So I just feel like we get a little carried away when we start talking about Russell Westbrook's place amongst the greats at that position, because people get enamored with the triple-double as a stat. No disrespect to Russ. It's a hell of an accomplishment. The fact that he was able to do it four out of the last 5 years is a testament to his effort, his energy, his intensity, and his mentality. That's to be applauded. But he ain't a top two-point guard all time. Let's stop that.
Big Perk, here's what I need from you. I need a list. Give me your top five here right now and where Russ ranks.
Well, first of all, Molly, can you repeat the when Max started talking, I tuned him out.
Too
and
much.
Then Cansey doubled down. I tuned him out as well. So I'm just going to refresh my mind and get my thoughts together, because they were saying just now was blasphemy, right? That was just ridiculous. And I got to say it in honor of Stephen A.
Stephen A.
Here's the top five. Here's my top five list of all time. You got Magic Johnson at number one, okay? You got Isaiah Thomas, the greatest little man in my opinion, at number two. You got Stephen Curry at number three, a generational talent, a point guard that changed the game of basketball. At number four, you got Russell Westbrook, okay? Russell Westbrook. We're not about to sit up here and downplay triple-doubles, and I'll dive into that in a second. And at number five, we got Chris Paul, CP3, the ultimate floor general, the guy, culture himself, okay? Now, when you talk about Russell Westbrook, and why I have him ranked top five, name someone that's going to replace him. And I'll argue with you right now and tell you why you're wrong. Okay? And when you listen to Scott Brooks' statement, he was not wrong about saying that Russell Westbrook ranks up there with the best of them. Because aside Scott Brooks being a coach and coaching Russell Westbrook with two organizations, guess what? Scott Brooks also was a player. Okay, Scott Brooks also played with all-time greats. He also played with Charles Barkley. He played with Hakeem Olajuwon. He won championships. He was in eras where there were other greats that were playing, so he knows how to reevaluate talent. And one thing we all know about Scott Brooks is Scott Brooks don't say much in the media. He rarely lashes out about anything about anyone. And when we talk about the Brody, right? We're talking about a guy that dominates, okay? And I know some people may try to make an argument of, well, you're leaving out John Stockton. Don't give me that John Stockton nonsense. Russell Westbrook put up 21 assists last night without Bradley Beal. Could you replace John Stockton with Russell Westbrook last night and tell me that John Stockton, with the personnel Westbrook had around him last night, that John Stockton would have finished this game last night with Bertans and Robin Lopez? With Robin Lopez with 21 assists? And then check this out.
Perk. I think that if you want to say that Westbrook, and take everyone except for Magic, say LeBron doesn't count, he's not really a point, whatever people want to say.
He don't count.
And you want to say Westbrook fits in with the other great point guards who never won a championship, AI, Steve Nash, Jason Kidd, Chris Paul. You want to argue about where they rank John Stockton, where they rank next to each other? You can make arguments on either side of that. I'm saying there's some dudes you're going to lose the argument to, like James Harden. My whole issue with Harden is he hasn't come through deep in the playoffs, but neither has Westbrook. And year in and year out, Harden's a more valuable player. He has more trade value. It's his team where he goes. He demonstrates this every year, even in Brooklyn. They don't win without him, even when they have KD and Kyrie. They've been playing in the same league together since Harden left OKC. In most of those years, there have been a couple where I think Westbrook's been better than Harden. But in most of those years, Harden has been better than Westbrook. How do you have James Harden off your list?
Well, first of all, let me stop you right there, okay? When James Harden's career is over with, he's not going to go down as a point guard. He's not going to be known as a point guard. He's going to be known as a shooting guard. That is James Harden's position. He's a shooting guard that can make plays for others. He only played point guard 2 years of his career, Max. 2 years.
Every year he's in Houston.
Chris Paul. And that's the craziest thing for you to say. When you Google James Harden, it says shooting guard. And you're sitting up here coming to tell me that James Harden is a point guard.
Let's get in here. He's a point guard. That's your move. Perk, you sit tight. I need you later. You Google his position. I got to go. Who better to ask where Russ ranks than his backcourt guy, Bradley Beal? You don't want to miss the Wizard star joining us live in just a bit. Oh, and you know we're going to ask him about his Twitter beef with Kent Bazemore, too. Stay tuned. Meanwhile, he hung up like that. Tebow time! Vamos! Tim Tebow hasn't played since the 2015 NFL season, but that isn't stopping the Jacksonville Jaguars, who are expected to sign 33-year-old Tebow to a one-year contract later this week or next week to play tight end, a position he never played in high school, college, or his previous three-year NFL career. Let's revisit Tim Tebow's career, starting with his time at Florida, where he was the 2007 Heisman Trophy winner as a sophomore and a part of the national championship teams in 2006 and 2008 under Urban Meyer. But after being a first-round pick by the Broncos in the 2010 draft, his NFL career fizzled, only playing three seasons with the Broncos and Jets. From 2010 to 2012, his completion percentage was the lowest in the NFL. So he gave baseball a try, playing in the Mets minor league system from 2017 to 2019, topping out at the AAA level in 287 career minor league games. He hit .223 with 18 homers and 107 RBI. We have a Super Bowl champ now. That we do. Booger McFarland. Top of the morning to you, Booger. Thank you so much for being with us. I will start with you here, Chris Canty. Do you have a problem with Jacksonville expecting to sign Tim Tebow, considering the history I just gave you?
Molly, I don't know if it's a problem as much as I don't understand what Urban Meyer is hoping to accomplish with this move. I don't get the value add with putting Tim Tebow on this roster, having him take up a spot when you're trying to figure out if you have enough guys that can be able to suit up and actually be competent football players in the fall with the Jags. Like, this is what I don't understand about it. Tim Tebow hadn't played in an NFL game since 2012. The last time he was on an NFL roster was 2015. So I'm supposed to expect a guy that spent that much time away from the game to be able to come back at 34 years of age and find a way to be able to contribute to this team? Doesn't make sense to me. So I just don't understand it from that perspective. And if you're Urban Meyer, I get that you want to have your guys as ambassadors to your program in the locker room, trying to have the ear of the other players, trying to establish a culture, trying to reiterate your messages. But the one problem with that, with Tebow is concerned, is Tebow, we don't know if he can play or not. And NFL players, you got to be able to play in order for you guys to follow you. You got to be able to play in order to be a leader. And I just don't know that Tim Tebow is going to be able to do that down in Jacksonville.
Let me say something. First of all, last time I remember Tebow on a field, he was throwing a pass to beat the Pittsburgh Steelers in the playoffs. People kind of forget about that. Look, let me tell you how I see Tim Tebow's situation, guys. I think you're right on the money, Chris. He's getting this opportunity because this is an Urban Meyer joint, right? He wants his guy there. Look, Urban Meyer wants a security blanket, too, in the pros, just like, any, you know, and this is his guy. He had success with him. He can deliver the message in the locker room. He's polarizing. That's because some people don't like that. They feel he brings the circus. But other people are drawn to him because he's charismatic. And this is what I really want to say about it. Tim Tebow has an opportunity now. He should not apologize for taking that opportunity, and he should take the opportunity. Me? I would take an opportunity that came my way and not apologize for it. I don't care if it's because I have a relationship with the person in charge. I don't care if it's white privilege. I don't care if it's because I am popular in certain circles because of religion or anything else. I would take my opportunity. Now, it's not that I feel that, we'll speak to white privilege for a second, for example, that doesn't come with any strings. You should take it, and I wouldn't apologize for mine. The question is, then what do you do with it? For example, people are linking this to another issue that we can get into a little bit later in the show involving Colin Kaepernick. I think for Tim Tebow, he doesn't have to worry about anyone else's situation. He doesn't have to worry about any privilege or opportunity he has. But I do think it puts him in the position where there's a certain responsibility for him to speak out for others who don't have the same kind of opportunity he does. That said, he should take it, run with it, and go as far as he can.
Yeah, Max, he can take the opportunity. But here's the thing that I would ask. You know, he's telling us that he is very close to Urban Meyer. Urban Meyer's like a father figure to him. If that's the case, then you want to make sure that Urban does his best. You're bringing undue attention onto Urban Meyer. Like, we all realize Tebow's not going to make the team. Tebow is not going to be a tight end in the National Football League for the reason that Chris Candy stated. You haven't played football for a long time. All of a sudden, you're going to come out here with these guys that have been training and doing this job for the last several years while you've been chasing baseball and trying to hit curveballs, and you're automatically going to make the team. So he's not going to make it. So I would ask Tim Tebow in a private moment, why are you doing this? Are you doing this just to fulfill a dream? You had that opportunity 9 years ago. Are you doing this just because you want to create some buzz? If you really care about Urban Meyer, and he's like a father figure to you, then you don't want to bring unnecessary attention. Urban has already made some questionable decisions. The strength coach, Chris Doyle, okay, that was a bad hire. You could argue drafting Travis Etienne in the first round when you have Robinson. That's a questionable decision. And now another questionable decision that has people inside the organization. There are people in Jacksonville's organizations that do not like this, and they've told Urban about this. So you're creating problems for yourself when already you're going to have a very tough learning curve. See, this isn't college. You're not a dictator. This is the NFL. It's a partnership. You got to be able to partner with your best players. And Urban, someone needs to tell Urban, you're not the most popular guy in the franchise. It's the starting quarterback. That's how the NFL works. And so for Tim Tebow, I get it, Max. You make a good point. Take the opportunity. But I would just ask you why. Why are you taking the opportunity?
Let me throw something at all of you.
Because I don't think that you think or anyone else in America thinks that you can make the team. So for me, I would just ask, why are you taking it? And for Urban, why are you bringing Tim Tebow in? It doesn't solve anything.
Hold that thought. Booger, hold that thought, because I want to throw this at all three of you. We all know Tim Tebow. If you've been around him, he's a special, high-character guy. We understand the relationship with Urban Meyer. We understand that Tim Tebow still has the desire to be a professional athlete. He can't shake that. Have you ever thought maybe what's happening is Urban Meyer just wants him around the team, maybe as a coach, but he knows this is how I draw him in with the roster spot, get him around the team, and rather than being a distraction, he'll actually aid his team and bring them up at a higher level, and this is just a way to get him in the door, and the ultimate desire is really for him to be a part of the staff and around his guys.
Guys, quickly, if I could just jump in, I think that's an interesting thought. I think that there may be truth to that. And I'll say something else, guys, and Booger and Chris, you can correct me if I'm wrong. There are distractions, but sometimes there could be a good distraction for a team, it seems to me. In other words, while the media is preoccupied, he's from there, it's his hometown, it's his college coach, all this stuff, he ain't gonna get any playing time, right? And now the media is dealing with all this Tebow stuff. That actually takes some stuff away from Trevor Lawrence and the rest of the team. Couldn't it be a good distraction in that sense?
Max, I don't think that's going to be a good distraction. I mean, Tim Tebow, a part of your team, that means the circus is coming to town. And I don't know that that kind of noise is what you want in trying to develop the number one overall pick in the face of your franchise in Trevor Lawrence.
Why is it a circus, though, if he's a great teammate?
Because he's such a polarizing player, and the fact that he is a failed quarterback and that he did decide he was going to go play baseball and rather than go through a position change during his first go-round in the National Football League, I think that brings into question whether or not he deserves the opportunity. In professional sports, it's a meritocracy. And Tebow has not earned the right to be able to be a part of the NFL after six seasons, eight if you want to count when he was actually on the field, and then going through a position change down there with the Jacksonville Jaguars. When you got so many players that are fighting to try to make this team that have been a part of the NFL for the last 3 or 4 years. So it just doesn't make sense to me to bring him in. It's an unnecessary distraction, especially for a coach that has to prove himself on the NFL level and a coach that's struggling with credibility in the locker room because of some of the things that Boog already pointed out.
Booger, I'll give you the last word.
Molly, here's what I would say to your point. If you want to bring him in as a coach, then just go ahead and bring him in as a coach. I think that would go over better in the organization. Hey, guys, here's Tim Tebow. We all know about him. He's going to come in. He's going to learn the ropes. He's going to put in the hours and work hard. If I see that as a former player and he's in there helping me somehow, I can dig with that. The biggest issue with Tim Tebow and why he's so polarizing, Molly, is he can't play. He couldn't play quarterback. He had one snap at tight end. The ball hit him in the head. He can't play. And so if a guy can't play, that's the reason the circus is in town, because everyone wants to know, why is he here? If you can't help us win and you're not going to help us make us a better organization, like, why are you here?
Yeah.
That's why it's a circus. And so Urban has to answer that question.
The
tight ends coach has to answer that question. And that's the issue. Why are we bringing unnecessary attention to a player that can't play?
Look, the meritocracy point is a good one. I think it relates to something we're going to get into later on.
Yeah.
Hey, I'm Molly Karam, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish. Yes, catch the clutch hits, strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-time chimney sweepers, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish, but you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root with nothing on your roof. Yes, stream your team. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit directtv.com to sign up today. Claim based on the total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Thanks so much for listening to the First Take pod. Have a fabulous day.
Brought to you by the Capital One Venture Card. Earn unlimited double miles on every purchase every day, and you can use those miles on any travel purchase. Plus, earn unlimited 5x miles on hotels and rental cars booked through Capital One Travel. Your next trip is closer than you think with the Venture Card from Capital One. Terms apply. See CapitalOne.com for details.
LeBron James feels great. Did you hear me? Great. After 2 days of high-level workouts and plans to return tonight when the Purple and Gold host the young, surging Knicks, James visited an ankle specialist last week. He's missed 24 of the Lakers' last 26 games with a high ankle sprain. Anthony Davis calms fans' nerves, saying LeBron will be just fine with a big old smile, and I paid attention to that. He returns to the Lakers team that is a game and a half back of the Blazers for six in the West, the last spot to avoid the play-in tournament. If the Lakers can't get through the play-in, it'll be the second time LeBron has missed the playoffs in his last three seasons. That after 13-season streak of making the playoffs each year. We're talking postseason. Chris Canty, tell me this. Does LeBron pass MJ? Here we go, everybody. Does LeBron pass Michael Jordan, his airness, the GOAT, if they repeat?
No, Molly, he can't pass Michael Jordan.
Okay.
Now, he can get damn close. And I already think it's LeBron and Michael Jordan in the room in terms of greatest players of all time and nobody else. That's how special LeBron James is. To get the 10 NBA Finals and to win four of them, that's an incredible accomplishment. He's a dynasty unto himself. But I don't think he can eclipse Michael Jordan. And here's why. When it comes down to being at your best when your best is required, Michael Jordan is 6-0 in the NBA Finals, and he's never let an NBA Finals series get to a Game 7. Now, I get it. I understand what happened in those other years that Michael Jordan didn't make it. My point being that Michael Jordan was one of the most dominant players that we've ever seen, if not the most dominant, in NBA Finals history. I just feel like for LeBron James to catch him, it would be a little bit much. So, I mean, you look at the series that he had in 2011 against the Dallas Mavericks. You look at the series that he had in the NBA Finals against the Spurs in 2014. And to me, those are things that knock LeBron James down a peg when we have this comparison between him and Michael Jordan. That being said, I mean, LeBron James is a phenomenal player. Again, I think he could get close to Michael Jordan. He might even tie where Michael Jordan is at, but I don't think he can get past him.
Stephen A. brought this up last week. If LeBron this year gets through, he didn't say, I'll add to it a little bit. If he gets through two of the following teams, Jazz, Suns, Clippers, and everyone's healthy, on his way to a finals where he meets a Nets big three and beats that big three in Brooklyn, Stephen A. said he might have to reevaluate. I'm with him. Now, I don't expect him to. That's one of the reasons I'd have to reevaluate. I don't think that anyone's going to beat the Nets' big three if those guys are playing together. All three of them. They're all healthy. I don't think they can do it, but that's the point. That would be the second time in LeBron's career that he slayed the monster. Michael Jordan never had to slay the monster because he was the monster, right? He was the monster. And by the way, Chris, it's a misconception about Jordan that, oh, what about all the other years? Every time, every single time in his prime, Jordan was on a team with a single other All-Star. They won the championship in under seven games, right? So, well, what about the Pistons? He hadn't played with another All-Star his whole career. Scottie Pippen made his first All-Star team. Still not in his prime, but made the All-Star team. Pippen had a migraine game seven against the defending champion Pistons, scored 2 points in 40 minutes. They lost. In other words, Jordan didn't have his All-Star again. Following year, he had his All-Star. Never again didn't win the finals in under seven games. Right. His peak is the highest of all time. And I think when we say greatest ever, if you sustained your peak long enough, we're not just weighing career accomplishments. We mean who was the best when they were at their best. That's MJ. But at a certain point, if LeBron is coming close enough to MJ's peak and sustaining it three times as long, if LeBron, for the second time in his career, remember, I don't think he'll be able to do this. That's why I have to give it to him if he does. First, he beats a 73-win Warriors team when it looked to me like Steph's the best player in the game. Not in any other era, but in this era, the way the rules are, the way he's shooting, it's Steph. LeBron screamed on him like he was his dad at one point. Remember that? Steph had his head down, walked away, and LeBron won the finals in seven games at Oracle. His team, partly because of him, held defensively, held the Warriors, the greatest half-court offense ever, last 4 minutes, 22 seconds at home, game seven. Fate of the universe on the line. They're about to be called the greatest team of all time to 0 points. LeBron, and by the way, iced the game on the free throw line. LeBron did, right?
Mm-hmm.
LeBron will have, for the second time, performed a miracle. Like when Muhammad Ali beat George Foreman 10 years after he beat Sonny Liston. That kind of miracle. And I think, given his closeness to MJ at his peak, if he were to do that, guys like you and me have to sit down and have a talk. We're going to have to reevaluate some things.
Also, guys, in just layman's terms, we go from a one-ring difference, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Five rings to six rings. So clearly closing the gap right there if he got it done again. Let me bring in somebody who has followed LeBron's career closer than maybe anybody, and that would be my guy, Brian Windhorst. Windy, do we got you? There you are. Good to see you, Windy. Thank you for joining the conversation. I want you to dive in on this. Where are you? Can LeBron pass MJ if he pulls off the repeat this season?
So you really have to qualify this conversation about whether you want to talk about nuance or not. Because if you don't want to talk about nuance, Jordan 6-0 in the finals, and there's really nothing to talk about. But Jordan didn't operate in an era with super teams. LeBron has had to navigate this era with super teams. And if you look at LeBron's career, a lot of it has been like steering down that river. You know, he couldn't overcome the Boston Celtics. So he had to make a maneuver to create his own super team in Miami. When that super team went south, when Dwayne Wade had knee issues, he had to go create a super team in Cleveland. Then that super team was overwhelmed by the super team that was created by the Warriors. So he had to make another maneuver and go to the Lakers to try to create another super team. Now, in his way, is another super team with the Nets, which he will try to have to scale that wall with all the other things that he's dealing with. That is a reality that did not exist in Michael Jordan's world. It doesn't mean that Michael Jordan wouldn't have created, you know, had scaled those walls. He probably would have. He probably would have maneuvered around. But for Chicago Bulls ownership that didn't want to pay salaries, it would have been a hell of a lot tougher than kind of the stuff that LeBron had to go through. So LeBron has had to climb that challenge that Jordan didn't. And having to do that and still reaching 10 finals despite those challenges, I think should count for something in the argument. But again, if you're only going to look at the 6-0, we really can't have a discussion. To have this squarely, in my view, you have to be willing to take into account all of the other factors that were going on in the NBA around them.
Here's the only thing, though, Brian. There was a big three in Boston. That is true. It was created, and he had to respond to that. But LeBron is really the creator of the super-duper team because none of the big three in Boston were a top three player in the league when they got together. LeBron was the best or second best player in the league, and Dwayne Wade was in the top three or four, and they had Chris Bosh. That's who invented the super team, LeBron James. Michael Jordan was on a super team. Not his fault, but it is his fault because he's Michael Jordan. That's why it was a super team. You take him off, it's just a great team, right? Or a good team. But people forget, when he got back from the layoff, he didn't win that year because he had, like, played 17 games. He didn't have his basketball legs. But the following season, the Orlando Magic won 60 games. They had Shaq and Penny, not to mention Grant and Nick Anderson and Dennis Scott and all those guys, a 60-game team that had just, with a prime Shaq and Penny that, and other good, real good players that had just been to the finals. He swept them. Swept them. The Seattle Supersonics were, if they weren't a super team, they were the next thing to it. They had multiple high-level all-stars and multiple high-level starters on the same team, which is why they won 64 games that year. They didn't go seven games. It's a little bit overstated that Michael Jordan, his first title came against the Lakers, right? Didn't Magic win the MVP that year? The Lakers. What'd they get it in, four or five? I'm already forgetting. It might have been five games. It's not like, but like, if you look at the Utah Jazz that Jordan used to bounce, how much different are they than the Spurs that won five championships? They had Karl Malone and John Stockton and Jeff Hornacek.
We got to leave it there. They never went seven. Wendy brought up a great point about super teams, and if we're going to hold that against LeBron, because he did orchestrate super teams.
He invented them.
Yeah.
Hey, I'm Molly Karam, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. Have you ridden an electric bike yet? Well, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes today, the number one selling e-bike in America. Two things stand out that bikers love about Lectric. Number one, the majority of their models come pre-assembled, so you don't need to be a bike savant to ride them. Number two, Lectric wants to empower riders to more exploring time outside on their bikes, so they've made range a priority. Long-range batteries allow riders to hit typically around 65 miles of range for up to 150 miles on some models. Bonus, Lectric has purposefully priced their bikes to be affordably awesome. So you don't have to break the bank to get these sweet rides. See why people who have made the switch to electric bikes have fallen in love with biking again by visiting lectricebikes.com. That's L-E-C-T-R-I-C ebikes.com.
First Take fans, listen up. Have you heard you can listen to episodes of this very show ad-free on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership? That's right. All your favorite First Take episodes can be heard on Amazon Music ad-free. But that's not all. You can listen to other top podcasts like The Low Post and PTI ad-free as well. They also have favorite shows like The Daily, Part of My Take, and Up First, all without ads. You know what this means? Uninterrupted listening, so no more cliffhangers. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts, so we know they definitely have something for you. And it's already included in your Prime membership. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/firsttake. That's amazon.com/firsttake to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Y'all, he dropped 50 on Saturday. Heck of a season individually and as a team. Joining us now on First Take, NBA All-Star here on behalf of Hotels.com, Wizards point guard Bradley Beal. Bradley, good day to you. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks for having me, team. It's a pleasure to be here.
We got a lot to discuss with you. You're also entertaining me on Twitter, so that's where I want to start because I like a good little fake beef. So you went back and forth with Bazemore on Twitter about his comments about you and Steph battling for that scoring title. Congrats on that. What's your reaction to him more recently saying, Bradley, that he's just joking around? He said, we got guys hurting hamstrings trying to keep up. Talk to me.
I didn't like that. I didn't like the last part of the comment. The first half of it about what Steph was doing was, I'm with you. 49 and 29 minutes is, I think everybody in here can agree that that's remarkable and truly amazing, right? So nobody's arguing that. But I didn't mention you. My hamstrings have nothing to do with why I go out there and play the game. And for me to injure my hamstring and then you kind of make a joke about it, I don't take that too fondly, honestly, because I take pride in being somebody who, my first 4 years, I was always labeled as an injury-prone guy. I was always labeled as somebody who couldn't stay on the floor. So I take pride in my body. I take pride in being on the floor and being available for my team and giving my team the best chance to win. My main focus is getting us to the playoffs. And that's all I'm focused on. And so that was just all I was just trying to kind of get my point across. Just keep your situation over there. Let's just keep it hoops. You know, don't make fun of something that's not funny.
Bradley, I know you've answered like how it's more important for you to help your team win than to win the scoring title. But Russ got his triple double locked up. Y'all are in the play-in tournament. You ain't getting back. Like, you know, it is what it is. You're going to have to play too. Come on, you and Russ don't have any side convos like, all right, bro, let me do my thing and see if I can get the scoring title over Steph Curry?
Honestly, no, Max, because nothing's changed. Nothing's changed for me. I've been doing the same thing. I've been playing the same way I've been playing the last 2-3 years. Nothing's changed. I feel like I've been putting up big numbers, but a lot of those numbers, I've been taking L's. I've been... You know, so now we're in a position where we're winning. You know, we're playing some of the best basketball we've been playing all year and at the right time. You know, so that's always been my main focus and priority. Russ is a machine. We all know that Russ is going to go out there and do what he do night in and night out. And my job is try to give us the best opportunity and chance to win. And my ability to score does that.
You might want to have that conversation. A scoring title over Steph Curry? Are you out of your mind? Your seating isn't going to change. He got his triple-double. It's your turn, brother. What's going on?
Wow.
You never know what can happen in these last couple games, Max. We might be able to move up 7th, 8th. You know, we might have some help from some other teams.
That's true. You could move up. That's true.
You never know.
You can still grab 8.
But I'm with you on that. It would be remarkable to be able to win that, but that wasn't a goal of mine at the beginning of the year. So I'm not going to make it one now, but if it happens, it happens. I will be happy. I'm not going to sit here and be naive about it.
So, Brad, your teammate Russell Westbrook passes the big O for most triple-doubles of all time. What was it like having a front-row seat to seeing him make history, and what has he meant to your team this season, especially what he's done in this second half?
Well, I'll start with what he means to our team, man. He's, man, heart and soul, you know, because it was always the misconception of Russ, you know, and how he is as a teammate, how he is as a person, how he responds to coaches and things like that. And it's the total opposite. You know, he's all about the team. He's all about winning. He's all about getting better. And he's all about pulling his teammates up and trying to get the best out of everybody. And I think that's something that's helped me this year, you know, and seeing his mentality and his approach to the game night in and night out. He's an MVP, you know, he's the first ballot Hall of Famer. And, you know, now he holds the record for most triple-doubles in the league. And to sit there, share the floor with him, and then last night to witness that, it's been, I ask him, like, how does he do it, you know, because I see him banged up, I see him injured, you know, I see him playing through all type of stuff. And, you know, he's constantly putting up the numbers. He's constantly giving us chances to win. And, you know, that's exemplary. You know, I take pride in that and his work ethic and his approach to the game. And it's just a trickle down effect to the rest of us.
Bradley, when the trade was made, it's like, oh, hold up. Russell Westbrook and Bradley Beal on the same team. I was sitting here saying that's an elite backcourt. There's no Steph and Clay. What's the best backcourt going to be? Because there was no guarantee Kyrie and Harden would play well together or that you two would, right? We have to wait to see how this would shake out. You knew Chris Paul and Devin Booker were going to fit. But how are you going to fit with Westbrook? How is Harden going to fit with Kyrie? Boy, y'all answered that question. But my question to you about both of you and your team's performance this year is, why did it take so long for Bradley Beal and Russell Westbrook to figure out how to lead the team to wins together?
I don't know, Max. I don't want to sit here and give you a list of excuses because we got a million. You know, we can sit here and say COVID hit us. We can sit here and say, you know, Thomas Bryant was injured. You know, at the beginning of the year, we didn't have him for the whole year. I dealt with injuries throughout the year. Didn't really have a full gel of team. We had 50 different lineups. We had brought guys up from the G. Signed some two-way guys, signed some 10-day guys, you know, so we have a list of excuses, you know, and I'm not going to sit here and say those are the causes, you know, so honestly, it was just a matter of us just clicking, and I couldn't really point to what it was, but once we won one game, it became 2, then 3, then 4, then 5, and We just stuck to our guns. We didn't change what worked for us, you know. And I think the biggest thing is we decided to start playing defense, you know. And I think
it's always the same
in the NBA. Yeah, we decided to start playing defense. We started winning. Look at
about that time.
So I guess, you know, it was just the right time, you know, right before the playoffs. Obviously, we wanted to give ourselves a chance. Coach Brooks actually broke it down right after All-Star break and kind of broke them down in series of fives, you know, our games of series of five, and let's just approach it that way and we'll try to win each series, get 3 out of 5. And we've been doing that. We've averaged, I think it's like 3.3 wins or whatever it is. So
we're
putting ourselves in positions to win. So, you know, now it's just a matter of capitalizing.
No question. Two things before we let you roll, real quick. The hamstring, not making light of it over here. I want you to know that. When can we expect you back on the court?
Soon, hopefully. Okay. I know it's not too serious, which is a blessing, because I know how strenuous these injuries can be, and I know how, you know, scary, and you can easily tweak it again or possibly compensate on the other side. I've seen it all. I hear it all. So I'm definitely going to be a little cautious with it, but at the same time, I understand that, you know, playoffs are right here. So I'm definitely working my tail off to get back. I'll miss the game tomorrow here in Atlanta, but I'll be reevaluated on Friday, and we'll see where we go from there.
All right. And lastly, tell me what you're doing with Hotels.com.
Oh, Hotels.com and I have partnered back right before the All-Star break, right before the All-Star game, I'm sorry. And ever since then, we've came up with these discount ideas to share with fans, and I'll be dropping them over Twitter this week. It's a Bill's Deal, is what it's called. So over some of my favorite locations over the city, we know that the world is starting to open back up. Everybody wants to travel and get back out and enjoy the summer. So it's just a way to be able to share some discounts for people to be able to travel and enjoy some hotel
love
time and some leisure time. Yeah.
We all want to get there. We all want to change
go
the scenery
the scoring
after
title.
Lockdown.
Stop fronting. Just go win the scoring title, Bradley Beal.
Listen.
Go beat Steph Curry for the scoring title. Stop fronting. Come on, man. Steph Curry
I'll be,
in his prime, you're going to beat him for the scoring title?
Yeah, I'll be looking for Beal's Deal, too, next time I travel. Bradley, appreciate you. Get back on the court.
Good luck.
We'll talk soon.